Full menu at ColbertHills.com.
Welcome back to In Focus here on News Radio KMAN. Brady Bowman with you on this Monday morning, rainy Monday morning here in the Little Apple. And Dave, you were telling me over break there was something you meant to get to, you forgot.
You know, I found out about this late Saturday. And, you know, of course, you know, we've had so much going on with basketball games, a lot of other things. But this is about something that there were some folks from Wisconsin that participated in the Aggieville races, the St. Patrick's Day road race.
Right, the big races, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. One named Jordy Nelson.
Jordy Nelson.
Jordy,
I've heard of him.
Nelson ran in both the 2 mile and the 10K. Wife Emily ran in the 2 mile. And son Royal, age 8, also ran in the 2 mile.
Age 8?
Age 8.
Okay.
Is what it says here. So let me see here. Royal finished 12th in the 9 and under category, by the way, with his paces at 9:54. Ended up with 19:47. Jordy, by the way, finished overall 169th out of 391. He did the 10K in 53:08, 8:34 breakout per mile. And then did 19:48, which means Royal beat him by a second in the 2 mile.
Well, that's good for the future.
How about that? Yeah, yeah. So that had to have been a fun name. You know, and we talked about, Bernie Butler being, a great icon in the community. And here you got another young man. By the way, Mom Emily finished behind both Royal and Jordy with a time of 19:09. We're not going to go to her. Yeah. They both beat her in the 2 mile. So Jordy and Royal got to run together in Aggieville. So, I knew about this, and I wanted to talk about it this morning, but we got a little bit carried away,
sure,
maybe a little bit with Sweet 16. But, here, Jordy has been in the news a lot this week. And he's here in town and just kind of, running under the cover of that black darkness now that he's got to be wearing. So.
Silver and black.
I wonder if he's going to have number 87.
I think he would be. I can't think of anybody else that would have 87 with the Raiders. And most of the time when a more high-profile player comes in, they usually kind of make some deals, be like, hey, man, I want my number.
Part of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe
27,
you know.
Oh, they won't allow that, though.
They won't?
No. In the NFL, you got to be in the teens or in the 80s if you're a wide receiver.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay. All right. So, anyway, we got a bunch of stuff that's going on.
Yes.
We were talking about a few things, and let's go back here and get back on track.
Sure. We'll go over this kind of international story. It's not something we usually talk about too much, and don't worry, has nothing to do with Trump or anything overly political or anything like that. Just something interesting I noticed. It's, again, on my Twitter, if you want to read the whole story, that's at Brady Today, but the headline: China appoints U.S.-trained economist as its central banker. And if you know, I don't, by no means an expert on the Chinese economy, but that did stick out at me a little bit, the U.S.-trained economist for the People's Bank of China. And he was appointed Monday to succeed the longtime governor of China's central bank. And it has the name. I thought I had it kind of pronounced right, but I found a pronouncer, and we'll just... This person's name is
Zhou Xiaoyuan.
There you go. That's the pronunciation on it. The longtime governor. He retired, and he was at a time when the ruling Communist Party is trying to reduce financial risk and surging debt. Apparently, they're having a debt problem there in China. And who's coming in? It's Yi Gang. He's a veteran deputy central banker. He'll head the People's Bank of China. And again, he is U.S. trained. And that's kind of interesting, because you'd always think that China's economy and the U.S. economy would be so different. You wouldn't think that a guy that's U.S. trained would be one that China would pick to head up their central bank. He got his PhD from the University of Illinois taught at Indiana University and also has a degree in business administration out of Hamline University in Minnesota. A guy that apparently China's thinking is going to keep things stable. The previous head of that bank worked all the way up until he was 70 years old, well past the retirement age, but they wanted to keep him in there for stability. So now they got this U.S.-trained guy that's going to head everything up. It's widely seen as People's Bank's widely seen as an advocate of conventional and market-oriented economics, but it's still not incredibly free trade, as you can probably imagine. Unlike central banks of other major economies, People's Bank doesn't make monetary policy. Instead, its mission is to carry out policy made by official body. The identity of those members is secret. So kind of an interesting thing there. But then we kind of got the same thing going on here to a degree, especially when you get Citizens United, maybe not secret in the way as far as secret banks here, but you got a lot of secret money that goes in, influences elections, et cetera, et cetera. But again, if you want to read more into that, I do have a link on my Twitter. Again, it's at Brady2Day, two being the numeral. Got that retweet from the Associated Press. If you're not following the AP, I recommend it. They have a lot of good stuff that's out there. But again, just something I noticed over the weekend that just kind of caught my eye, just kind of a, interesting. Some other things I wanted to go over real quick before we have our last break of the hour. It rained. Uh-huh. Finally, it rained.
You know, we had Greg McClure on In Focus the other day.
I was going to ask you
about
what he had to
say. And we talked about moisture, and he said, really, it's not as bad as you think it is, you know, in spite of the fact that we haven't had much precipitation. But we definitely do need more, but it's not as drought problematic as, say, western Kansas. I did notice on a couple of social media accounts from friends that they were getting some rain down southwest. Friends from places like Sublette and Dodge City and Cimarron all making remarks about rain in that area. Don't know how much they got, but any rain at this point from those folks is welcome rain.
And this is an AP report from February 27th. Latest report said nearly half of the winter wheat crop in the state is struggling for lack of moisture. Of course, this is for today. Reported back then about 2 weeks ago that 49% of the wheat is in poor to very poor condition. Pretty high percentage, actually. Remaining crop is 39% fair. Again, this is a couple weeks ago. 11% good, 1% excellent. Assessment comes amid estimates that topsoil moisture supplies, as you can imagine, running short across 74% of the state. Subsoil moisture levels were faring only slightly better, with about 71% rated as adequate. Looked at a story from the Dodge City Daily Globe written February 27th, so around the same time. And especially with southwest Kansas, the winter wheat crop is very much in doubt. And I'm curious, I probably should have went back and listened to your interview with Greg McClure, but I know prices, there could be a benefit possibly to some wheat having some problems because they've been struggling with a lot of oversupply of grain. Mm-hmm. and those prices going down. I kind of wonder if the wheat crop doesn't fare very good this summer, this harvest, that maybe that shoots those prices up. Maybe that could be somewhat of a silver lining, but...
Well, if you don't have as much to sell...
Well, then that's a good
point. Kind of a wash.
That's a good point.
It's kind of a wash, but yeah, there's... I know that if I recall, the latest statistics that came out showed that just a slight percent, single-digit percent, was in excellent condition across Kansas. Most of it is in the good to very poor categories. So it's going to be it could be a tough year for those raising wheat, and that's a huge, obviously, economic driver for us here in the Sunflower State, the wheat state.
And they're also worried about root systems not getting deep enough where they need to go, because getting to that subsoil. And also reading in this Dodge City Globe report that one concern that they've been having about the wheat crop in the state is not having a lot of snow cover. And they say that snow cover really kind of helps with the winter wheat when temperatures got really cold at the beginning of the year in January when we're getting those below zero. Sometimes we can withstand that if there's a little bit of a snow cover, a little bit of a blanket, a little bit of insulation from that. But I mean, it's really kind of been a double whammy on that. You had really low temperatures. You didn't have a blanket of snow insulating from those really low temperatures. And then on top of that, you have the drought situation that the state of Kansas is in. And I think we talked about this at some point, either last week or the week before, where we had that report from the Kansas Water Office that Kansas was pretty much the driest state in the country.
Yep, it is.
As far as expected moisture counts, where they need to be right now. And I was actually wondering, I meant to look this up during the break, but I don't know if you've seen any rain totals, at least for here in Manhattan, that we've
I have not
gotten so far.
I have to do some research on that when we during the break.
Yeah, yeah. We do know it's not enough. That's
no.
Probably pretty safe it's to
not
say.
Not enough. Shall we take that break? 9:43, K-Man's In Focus. We'll be back with more with Brady. And, of course, phone lines are open if you'd like to chat about anything that we've talked about this morning. 537-1350.